We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, a radio.com sports station.
All right, now joining us on the dial pad guest line, it is the aforementioned Adam Kaplan, 95.7 The Game NFL insider. Adam, Ryan Covey, Matt Kolsky, Ray Rado. What's going on, brother? How are you?
Guys, good to talk to you. I am now in Tampa on my way to travel to Indianapolis to visit the Colts, who are going to host the Cleveland Browns, the much-hyped Cleveland Browns, for the next 2 days, Wednesday and Thursday.
All right, let's start with the Cleveland Browns. I got a report that CBS is sending their number one broadcast team to their game, and there's a lot of hype around that Cleveland Browns squad this year. Can they possibly live up to it? I mean, it's just got to be, hey, make the playoffs, right? And you've done your job for the year for the Cleveland Browns?
Well, if everybody's healthy, yeah, the expectation is they're going to seriously challenge for the AFC North, not just for a wild card spot, but to win that division for the first time in over 20 years. They are a legitimate playoff contender in the AFC. I don't think there's any question about that. Yeah, so if they don't make the playoffs one way or the other, I think it should be a disappointment. This is a very good roster, and there's going to be some pressure on the coaches, especially head coach Freddie Kitchens.
Would you fire him if they don't make the playoffs? And that's a facetious question, but I just wanted to ask it.
Yeah, look, now if they're 4-12, we got a problem. Right, we got a problem. But they're going to be competitive because they've drafted so well. Their defense, folks, you got to see this defense. They're absolutely loaded, and I really look forward to seeing this defense against a good cold offense this week, although Andrew Luck obviously will not practice yet. He's dealing with that mysterious calf injury that's lingered for a couple months.
You mean the little bone that Jim Irsay? I'm thinking of Andrew. Yeah, never mind. I had a spasm.
yes, which Jim Irsay did say is a little bit of a bone. Now he didn't really explain that. I'm going to find out for the Colts tomorrow exactly what that is.
I want to ask you about the team you just said you're with right now. Obviously, new coach in town, Bruce Arians, much ballyhooed, offensive guy, one of the rumored quarterback whisperers. And there's a quarterback there who, boy, we're trying to figure out whether this guy can be good or not. There's a ton of talent around him, particularly receivers. What do you make of Jameis Winston? Is this the year that he breaks out, or is this the beginning of the end?
Well, Bruce Arians, guys, is going to hand the play calling off to his protege, Byron Leftwich. And Leftwich was an interim offense coordinator with the Cardinals last season, did a good job, and Bruce really believes in Byron Leftwich as a play caller, so he'll just oversee it, but Byron's going to call day-to-day the offense, and they feel like right now Jameis Winston is not going to make the same mistakes he's made in the past in terms of making bad decisions with the football. That's the big issue with him. It's never an issue of talent. He's actually a pretty smart kid. It's just that whatever happens sometimes, he forces too many throws, and that's really hurt them. And this year, for the Buccaneers, there's no question the offense will have to carry the defense because they have a lot of guys hurt. Vita Vea is out for a while with his sprained knee. Jason Pierre-Paul won't be back until November at the earliest. He may not even play this season. So they've got a lot of injury issues and a defense that just lacks enough talent. But offensively, as you said, they are absolutely loaded.
Yeah, boy, 49ers not the only team dealing with injuries. It should make 49ers fans so happy to know. Talking to Adam Kaplan, our NFL, the 95.7 The Game NFL insider. I want to ask you about the Indianapolis Colts. You know, here's a team with really, when you think about a franchise quarterback carrying a team as far as they're ever going to go, the Colts would definitely be that team. They've added to that defense over the years. Luck finally looked healthy last year. The Colts are kind of a trendy pick to be a contender in the AFC this year. How highly do you have them rated, and where do you think their ceiling is?
Well, I think they're still the favorite, being that they got the job done more or less last year. But I'll tell you what, the team I was with last week in the Tennessee Titans might have the most complete roster in the AFC South. They are loaded. The only issue there is left tackle Taylor Lewan is going to miss four games due to suspension, but they are loaded. Now, the Colts, they have a great offensive line. I don't worry about their offense. Now, you mentioned their defense. Their defense lacks stars. I think that's the problem, unlike on offense where they're absolutely loaded. I think the Titans are going to give the Colts a run for their money in the AFC South. I'm probably, if I had to pick today, I probably would pick the Colts, but I think it's very close between the Colts and the Titans. And then, of course, you've got the Texans, who are always a fun team to watch, but you're always concerned about their offensive line.
On the assumption that there's going to be an average amount of turnover among the playoff teams, which would be 6 out of the 10 would be new, who's a mortal lock to make it in each conference?
Mortal lock. God, I can't believe I'm saying this, Ray, but I got to say Cleveland. I just, with that, with the talent level, and I'm a Baker Mayfield believer, I think that's one team that's going to make it. That, not only did they not make it last year, it's been a long time since they've actually been a challenger. So I think they would be a team in the AFC. And then in the NFC, who's a team that hasn't made it a commit? You look at it and say, who could get in there? I think Atlanta's going to bounce back after a horrific year with injuries. I believe Atlanta's going to bounce back and get the playoffs.
If we're looking locally at the San Francisco 49ers, we talked when you were in here about all the hype that was being paid to them. Let's say they are capable of staying healthy. What do you think? What's the thing that you think needs to happen to make the Niners a, let's just say, 500 or better football team? What thing that we have not yet seen needs to happen?
We talked a little about this, guys, when I was in, but I could just expand on it. I really believe that Jimmy Garoppolo's got to play as a top 12 quarterback for them to make the playoffs. I mean, he's just he has to stay healthy and has to have a great year. And I think that now the problem with Bosa is even if he plays week one, we don't know how effective he's going to be. That D line that has been revamped here has obviously a new coach, Chris Kucerik. It also has to be dominant. Those are the two areas where I think that the quarterback and the defensive line, they've got to lead the way.
As far as the way that Antonio Brown has behaved, when you think about the amount of money that the Raiders committed to him, I get it. We haven't played any football yet, Adam, but any buyer's remorse at this point just based on the general headache that he's provided without actually helping that football team win any games yet?
It's you make a fair point because a lot of people are obviously upset at Antonio Brown right now, but I want to see what happens. Once he starts practicing, now it shouldn't be too long. The one issue, though, with those blisters, and he did a frostbite on those feet, the issue is how much he can do when he comes back, and then plus because he's missed so much time in training camp, how soon could he get that chemistry ready with Derek Carr? I want to see games first in the regular season. I want to see at least a quarter of the season before we start criticizing the decision to trade for him. Now, let's face it, it hasn't gone well so far. It's been somewhat embarrassing. But we have also to let it see it play out, as you said, and it's really the best point of all. We have to see a regular season game or two. I want to see four, and I want to see him healthy. And now, also, let's evaluate this as we talk during the season. Are there any more disruptions? Because the disruptions they've had in training camp are ridiculous. It never should have happened.
Oh, there were great disruptions. I mean, let's be honest here. These were special. I mean, when you go...
We've never heard of these before, right.
When you go head to toe and skip everything in between, you've done well. I mean, at least for entertainment purposes. I mean, the foot part was an accident. The helmet part, I don't know, maybe he just wanted to see where the third rail was with this new team. But he delivers when asked. And now I need to know what his next thing's going to be. Is he going to be pregnant?
Well, what's left, Ray? What could possibly happen?
I'm just going head toe. What's in the middle?
I saw the movie Junior.
I'll
it's
say
possible.
This though: the fans will love this guy when he works. Because I talked to the coaches when I was there last week. He was great in OTAs, no problems on the field. I mean, he's so competitive. But the one thing we do need to talk about is the relationship between Carr and Brown, because that's one we know. His last relationship with his quarterback in Pittsburgh was not very good. So these two guys, they need to get that chemistry going and see what happens here.
Yeah, see, where I think it's really going to get interesting is if they win a couple games where Antonio Brown doesn't catch a lot of balls. That's where this gets interesting to me. I want to just ask you, though. You've been traveling all over the country doing this training camp tour. Is there one name or even a couple of guys who we don't yet know, but by the end of the calendar year, we're going to be thinking about them as football players?
Actually, I'm going to give you one right off the bat. I've got like 12 in my mind, but I'm going to give you one obscure one for Raider fans out there. Anthony Rush, the Eagles cut him, and the Raiders are looking for a backup tackle, a young guy, developmental guy, and he had an incredible week one. I talked to someone who watched the All-22, a personnel guy. He said he was one of the most dominant players he saw in week one from any team on tape. So that's just for a Raider fan out there. Keep your eye on this kid. He's an undrafted free agent of UAB. But as far as the veterans are concerned, I would probably say there are like two or three guys that I'm looking forward to seeing with the Titans. I would say that when you look at guys coming back, Delanie Walker looked really good last Saturday. He's a guy that was hurt last season. He did have one pass in Saturday's practice, but remember, they're going to be a conservative offense. Walker, the former 49ers, is going to have a really good season, a bounce-back season. Just talking to the Titans, they're really glad to have him back because they missed him last season way too much. And that's probably, that's my sleeper team, the Titans. It's one team that no one seems to talk about, but I think it's going to really bounce back. I think they'll be a solid playoff team again. I think they could win that division. In Philly, I'm going to give you the name of Dallas Goedert. That was the first team I saw. Yeah. Dallas Goedert, a second-round pick last year, the Eagles. He's headed for a breakout season. Yes, Zach Ertz set an NFL record in catches for a season at tight end. I think Goddard's going to have a breakout season. He has a calf injury. They're not going to play him the rest of the preseason. Watch this kid. Nobody could cover him. He's big. He could run. And he's ready to have 50-plus catches, which is a lot for a second tight end.
Yeah, he started making some noise at the end of the year last year. And I know folks will be glad to see Delanie Walker back on the field. That was a bad injury last year. He was a good 49er. Hey, appreciate your time, as always. Thanks so much for coming on. And we'll talk to you soon, okay?
Guys, thank you.
All right, good stuff right there from Adam Kaplan, our NFL insider for 95.7 The Game. Coming up, guys, will Hard Knocks address the Antonio Brown helmet issue? We'll get into that. We got some sound coming up. Drew Rosenhaus and Antonio spoke up at Raiders camp today. Plus, Cam Minman's going to join us at about 3:30 with the latest from 49ers camp. We'll get an update on that C.J. Beathard thumb injury. In the meantime, though, my friend and yours, here's Elena.
Now back to the Damon Bruce Show on 95.7 The Game.
Yeah, thanks to
Sean McVay came my last year as the head coach in Tampa. He wanted to get in the NFL, so we made him a secretary, really, just to get him in the building. McVay started like I started. They called me the piss boy in the Mel Brooks movie. You know, they'd call for the guy to come running over there with the bucket. And then next thing I know it, he's helping coach the wide receivers. And he's coming up with ideas for game plans.
John Gruden with the Hard Knocks preview. What's happening, everybody? Ryan Covey, Matt Kolsky, Ray Ratto. This is the Dave and Bruce Show. Episode number two tonight. All right, Coach. The piss boy, huh?
I was not expecting a History of the World Part 1 reference, but I'm glad we got it. We should get. Can we get some piss boy drops for later?
I mean, we've already had a little Dickerson today. Let's get a little piss boy drops. Let's just make the show just the lowest brow.
Have you seen that?
As possible.
That movie?
Yeah, of course. It's been a few years.
Yeah, great film.
Yes.
Le Garçon de Piss.
It's just got such a nice ring to it.
It does.
It was not one of Mel's best movies.
No, Spaceballs is his best movie.
Oh, get out.
Blazing Saddles.
No, get your stuff and
I know.
Go.
We had this conversation last week. Spaceballs is a great movie, though. They're combing the desert.
Come on. I'm surrounded by morons.
No, it's a-holes.
Well, it depends if you watch the edited version or not.
Yeah, exactly. It's a-holes. But
I was doing the edited version for radio.
Ah, look at you. You FCC compliant SOBU.
One of my favorite, I have two favorite FCC editing moments from my youth.
The two youths.
Yeah. One is in A Fish Called Wanda. Where, because they always, when we were kids, they've gotten more creative with the way they replace words now. But when we were kids, a-hole became moron every time. And there's a scene in Fish Called Wanda where Kevin Kline is driving erratically and screams that at someone. and just knowing what it originally was and having him go, moron, was very funny. And then in my friend's mother, this is another thing, kids. Back in the day, we had these things called VCRs. And you could take this thing called a videotape and put it in your VCR and physically record what was airing on your television. And then you would have a physical copy of it. Don't worry about it. We used to do physical copies of things. So she recorded 16 candles off of television. And there's a scene where two of the main characters, the jock and the Anthony Michael Hall, are talking to each other in a garage, and they use a dirty phrase that includes a very bad word, and they replace it with one night stand. It was an easy something or other, and it's replaced with one night stand. And they both say it in the space of about 30 seconds. And on the WGN TV edit, they flipped the voices.
Oh, wow.
So it has Jake the jock being like, if all I wanted was a one night stand, then I could have any girl in school. And then Anthony Michael Hall goes, if you're looking for a one night stand, then you should look for someone else. It's pretty good. That's my story about radio edits.
Thank you, Matt. I think we all feel better about it as well.
You're welcome.
Yeah. No, but that's why I can't watch movies on television. I can't. You got the commercials and you got the edits. It drives me nuts.
Yeah. 510 says in Die Hard, they keep saying mother, father. It's good times.
How about on Snakes on a Plane? They said, I've had it with these Monday to Friday snakes on this Monday to Friday plane. Like, what does that mean?
I don't know.
Monday to Friday, huh?
It's a commuter. It's a commuter plane.
Yeah. It's not available on the weekends.
It's a southwest to Burbank.
No doubt.
We're going to get so many good ones on the text line now.
Yeah,
you guys
favorite.
Are a bunch of casseroles, 707 said.
95795. Go ahead and give it to us. By the way, Antonio Brown is back. He tweeted out earlier he was looking for an air shut made after 2010. He said he'd give somebody an autographed helmet. Apparently, he's got his helmet. He's in camp.
Quickly, is that enough?
What?
An autographed helmet?
I was thinking it was a little light for like, potentially preventing Antonio Brown from retiring from professional football.
Let's say you played high school football.
That's your helmet. That's Al Bundy.
You graduated in 2016. You're not playing college ball. You got your air shut in the garage collecting dust. You find out Antonio Brown, top three receiver in football, desperately needs it, and the payday is a signed helmet? I mean, you can break me off a little cash, right?
I mean, a little something. Maybe like the cost of the helmet?
Yeah. Or 50 times the cost of the helmet. Because you're Antonio Brown, and you just signed a contract for $31 million.
I think he wanted to keep the public price low so that somebody would find one and then get in touch, go, by the way, the signed helmet, that's not going to cut it.
Okay. So maybe there was a negotiation.
No, I think you don't want to go, I'll pay anything.
Because then they lead with, I for $500,000.
I have the helmet that will allow you to play, but it'll cost you $6 million.
You're saying it's like a flea market. You set an initial price with the expectation of further haggling.
Yeah, knowing full well that unless the person you're dealing with is an idiot.
Right. They're going to ask for something
They're going to ask for something more. And if somebody would just do it for an autographed helmet, there's an excellent chance that what you have is not an air shut at
all.
Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
All right, so Drew Rosenhaus and Antonio Brown up in Napa today.
Oh,
apparently, they got the helmet. It's just awkward watching Drew Rosenhaus get out of the car with Antonio. It's like it's his only client or something. It's like, what is he there for, like emotional support? But at any rate, Drew Rosenhaus on the helmet gate. It was the injury. It was the feet, not the helmet.
The injury was the reason that he was away from the team, one. Two, the helmet's something we've been working on for months. And we've been working with the NFL and working with the Raiders to figure out a solution. We think we found one. We're working on that right now. There's no connection with the helmet and him being here. It's really we're finished with his treatment, and he can now focus on getting healthy and getting back on the field for the team. And he's looking forward to having a great season.
All right, Drew Rosenhaus, courtesy of NFL.com.
Do we have a full video, and can we find out if after that anyone said, so is it true that he painted an old helmet himself and tried to get on the field with it?
Yeah.
Because
that needs to be asked.
Yeah, some things need to be asked here.
That would be the first question I would have. did you really try and paint a helmet and get back out on the practice field and think anybody wouldn't notice?
Well, he wouldn't ask that of Rosenhaus. They'd ask that of Brown directly.
Right, but my point is, if you're saying the only issue here has been the feet, then why are we reading stories about him being on and off the field before the feet because of the helmet?
Because they think, weirdly enough, that the helmet is the bigger story right now. The feet is more, the feet are more problematic.
Well,
but the helmet is more bizarre, and it's the one that he has caught the most grief for. So I think that's he's trying to put out that fire.
We got an update on the feet, by the way, fellas. And again, this courtesy of NFL.com. Antonio Brown.
Hot feet update.
How the feet?
I'm a lot better, you know, working towards 100%. It's been a process with the feet. Anytime, you know, you got a lot of blisters and it's hard to change direction, cut and run and be able to do what I do naturally. But I'm going to start from the good foot. I've been away getting a lot of work, so I'm excited to just move forward.
Hey, Ryan. Yeah, man, you work at 95.7 The Game. You work at sports radio. That's pretty badass, man. Yeah, it's pretty cool. What's a day at work like? Well, you know, big story broke Friday. Dude didn't want to play football because of his helmet. And then, you know, we found out later it was more about his feet. So we did a couple hours on feet and took some calls, talked to Ray and Matt. But yeah, mostly we talked about dude's feet. It was sweet. How about you? That's where we're at. That's my life right now. Talking about dudes' feet. Well, foot, feet. Look,
to be fair, we were talking about dudes' feet the minute Rex Ryan got a job in the league.
Good call.
Thank you. I'll be here all week.
Yeah, and, I mean, as Mina Kimes said, this isn't unprecedented. It's just weird. And if you can't embrace weird in practice football time, then you may as well just learn to play the accordion and sleep in front of a drugstore?
I think we all embrace it. Here's my question. And, Albie, maybe you can pull some of this sound. As I recall, last week on Hard Knocks, I saw a day of practice where Antonio Brown showed up, put on shoes, and ran all over everyone and scored multiple touchdowns. And then coaches were like, oh, man, he's the best. I'm so glad he's out there. That was with the feet, right?
Well, it wasn't from the future. He didn't get in a DeLorean,
I'm assuming it also wasn't OTA video, like that. There was a day where he showed up at training camp and played like Antonio Brown. Now, I'm not saying the feet aren't hurtful; they look like they must be burning constantly. But to say that this was always all about the feet does stretch my willing suspension of disbelief a bit.
Well, if what you say did in fact happen the way you said it, and I'm not questioning you, then the story about the cryotherapy in France is nonsense. Because he didn't fly back to France after he arrived at training camp and then come back with burned feet.
Well, no, I'm saying he was practicing on those feet, I think. I'm not saying it was advised.
No,
I'm just saying he pulled it off.
What I'm saying is, whatever he did to his feet, based on your story, happened after he did those things. So I'm eliminating France as an option. He might have done cryotherapy and burned them, but he might have done them near training camp.
No, but what I'm saying is that was training camp, I think.
I understand.
We'd already seen the bottom of his feet.
The incident in question, you're going to have to live with this. This is the deal.
I signed up for this.
The incident in question would logically have had to have happened after you saw the film of him in training camp. That's what I'm saying. That the cryotherapy thing could have happened, but after the workout you saw.
Oh, I was suggesting that the workout was, in fact, after the cryotherapy, and that in his feet, while perhaps painful, are not prohibitive. That's the question I'm asking.
Fellas, we're going to have to pick up this stimulating foot conversation in a little bit.
Look, this is the job now. Yeah. This is it. You're talking feet.
All right, great news. We got Cam Inman joining us on the Dialpad guest line. Cam, how are your feet today?
You know, I once worked in a shoe store, and ever since then, I can look at people's feet and pretty much predict or actually guess the size of shoe they wear. It's a bad curse I'm now.
I don't know
what Antonio Brown's are.
You could take that to a state fair and make some money.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I'd rather fry Oreos.
Deep fried Oreos. That's how you guess people's weight or their age, right? It's their weight, right?
If you want to limit your marketability, that's entirely up to you.
That's kind of how we roll. Hey, what's the latest on CJ Beathard, Cam?
Yeah, CJ showed up at practice today, had a wrap around his right thumb and did not practice, sat and watched practice the whole time. And so you would think, Well, a couple things. One, that now Nick Mullins, who everybody figured was going to be the number two quarterback, just pretty much solidified that if CJ is going to be out a week or so, just I don't think CJ had done enough to unseat Nick out of the QB2 role. And I'd say the other thing you think about is CJ's, this is his third year on the Niners, and this is his third, he's banged his right thumb or right wrist on a helmet because he likes to stay in the pocket, and then that usually leads to somebody taking his job. So part of the hazards of being a quarterback that likes to stay in the pocket who's known for his toughness. But he was out there today watching them, and Garoppolo and Mullins practiced well. And other than that, off they go to Denver in a few days to do some joint practices and then the exhibition, which Garoppolo is supposed to start, and then you're obviously going to see Mullins, and then I would not expect to see CJ just considering he wasn't practicing today. If he toughs it out and plays, that's fine, but otherwise kid Wilton Spates from UCLA probably get more reps like he did the other night when CJ got hurt.
When it comes to this backup quarterback competition, I think some people are a little confused because a lot of us watch and feel like Nick Mullins looks more comfortable. Nick Mullins looks like he has a better grasp of the offense. Nick Mullins looks like he misses his target a little bit less. And yet, it seems like if Kyle Shanahan had his druthers, C.J. Beathard would be the backup quarterback to Garoppolo. So, first of all, who do you think has been better and looks better? And second of all, do you think that's true about Shanahan?
Well, I think Nick's looked better, and he's obviously played better in games than CJ has. He has 3 wins and 8 starts. CJ has 1 and 10. The narrative that Kyle Shanahan's guy is CJ Beathard, I'd say is almost a little too unfair. Yes, he drafted him in the third round and has praised him for a couple of years now, but that doesn't mean he hasn't praised Nick Mullins. And I think what he wanted to do all off season here was present that they were on a balanced footing, that it's a dead heat for the QB2 role, which is a position which hopefully never comes to see the light of day this season, hoping that Jimmy Garoppolo is healthy. So, and you could also increase potential trade value, although I think right now if they need the roster spot, they cut CJ and let any other team try to pick him up, a guy that was 1-9 that has a hurt thumb, and he's going to take the place of a quarterback who's been in your system all offseason. So I don't see that happen. So the Niners would try to get him on the practice squad if they do cut him, which isn't guaranteed. They can carry him on, carry 3 guys on the roster if they want to make sure that Garoppolo's knee is fully healthy, as it appears to be.
Well, if that's the case, if he really does view this as an equal competition, isn't that unusual for an offensive minded guy to not have sort of all but made up his mind by now? I mean, I just don't get the value in saying yes, it's an even job, unless you're trying to tell the two of them both of you need to be better than you are right now.
That's what I think you're at, Ray. I think he's trying to inspire competition and have these guys improve their games, because neither one of them are perfect. I mean, Nick needed to improve his arm strength. CJ needed to improve his timing in the pocket and awareness. And neither one of those are perfect. We saw it on Saturday night. Nick had a little trouble throwing outside the numbers, which is his MO, and CJ stayed in the pocket too long a couple of times. So, and you know what? This whole thing, it really shouldn't matter. It should be a moot point, because the only thing that the Niner fans need to worry about regarding quarterbacks, that Garoppolo has made it through training camp healthy with a lot of workload. And hopefully that's still the case. They're going to play him through these first two exhibitions a little bit, which I'm still not sold on, but that's what they want to do to desensitize him so that he's ready for the week one stuff in Tampa.
Talking to Cam Inman from the Bay Area News Group, when might we find out just how much workload we can expect for Garoppolo in these two games?
I would imagine Shanahan will tell us on Saturday, actually, because they're going to Denver. They'll practice in Denver against the Broncos on Friday, Saturday, and then Shanahan will talk to us and probably be more definitive about it. He might say tomorrow that Jimmy's probably only going to play a couple series, or maybe I don't know if he wants to push him through the first quarter or not. I doubt it. Probably just one or two. That's kind of how he's done it. So, and I'm sure Jimmy wants to play more just because he wants to play. He hasn't played in a game setting since September, but I think the prudent thing is to really, you know, save this for September 8th at Tampa.
Who do you think will be the starting wide receivers week one in Tampa?
Yeah, that is a good question. You have Dante Pettis, Marquise Goodwin, Deebo Samuel, and Jalen Hurd are your four candidates, I'd say. Jalen Hurd has looked better and better in camp. He actually looked way better in the game with those two touchdown catches, but don't value it all on that. The guy is still a very raw receiver, learning how to run routes, block, a lot of that. But he can do it from the slot, which they're going to need him to do with Trent Taylor out. So, I mean, it basically going to come down to, is Deebo Samuel ready to go? Is Dante Pettis, Marquise Goodwin, they're your returning vets. Are they going to hold on to the job that should be theirs? And they got another couple of weeks to figure that out to see if one of these rookies can go up and seize it. So I'm not ready to say one or the other. I would guess it's Dante and Goodwin, but they're going to rotate in the other two guys.
What I'm hearing here is that they don't have any better idea now about their wide receivers than they did a year ago.
No, I think they...
Or do they have an... Let me finish the question. Do they actually have an idea and they're waiting for the thing they want to do to suddenly emerge?
I think they want to have these rookies inspire the veterans and really push them because nobody's been consistent through camp. Everybody's had a drop here or there or blown assignment here or there. So it's not like all of a sudden we have Jerry Rice catching the ball running down to the end zone every time he catches it in practice. Pettis had a nice reception today where he beat Richard Sherman off the line and had a pretty easy catch. Goodwin's a guy that people just want to dismiss just because there's some new toys in the shop to play with. And I don't know if that's a smart idea to do yet. So the fact that you have better options, that's true. And then, you know, Kendrick Bourne's around too. And he had a drop the other night, which was not good for his case. But I think he's safe on the roster.
Hey, I want to ask you, Cam, about Dre Greenlaw. It looked pretty instinctual, explosive. I watched a couple of the clips where he bit on the play action just a little bit.
Yeah.
So he might be a bit of a liability in the pass game, which, you know, in the NFL nowadays, you got to be good in pass protection as a linebacker. How much is he inserting himself into this competition? And, you know, maybe for a guy like Malcolm Smith, who hasn't been available a lot the last couple of years, maybe making him a little expendable.
It is a good competition. Malcolm missed some time with a hamstring tightness, which, you know, he's missed a lot of time in his 2.5 years with the Niners. But he came back to practice today and lined up on the first team unit with Quan Alexander and Fred Warner. And he's looked pretty good. Dre Greenlaw has flashed at times, which some rookies can do, showing their speed and physicality. But then these exhibition games are where they can expose some flaws. And like you saw, there were flaws in his coverage. Yeah, he covered the guy out of the back sometimes good, but if the running back is kind of running a little flare route, that's where he kind of got lost. And, you know, Robert Saleh talked about that today, their defensive coordinator, saying it's those rookie growing pains that you got to teach them how they fit in the system. So the good news is this is a young physical linebacker that has speed. That could probably do it if you needed him to, if Malcolm Smith is hurt or you want to move on from the Malcolm Smith experiment.
Looking at the secondary, obviously we know Richard Sherman is your guy at one of the cornerback spots. The other one, I'm kind of curious. If you could give the Niners truth serum and ask them, in a perfect world, is it Akello Witherspoon or is it Jason Verrett stays healthy because we don't really know that Akello Witherspoon can be a high-level starting corner.
Nor do we know if Jason Verrett can stay healthy.
Of course.
And, you know...
But if they had their preference...
Well,
which,
sure. If they had their preference, you'd take Verrett.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got this dog mentality where he's tough and adds some ferocity on the defense, plays tight coverage, which is what you want to do. Witherspoon has had so many highs and lows, and that goes through this camp. He started camp really well, but there's been times where he's given up too many easy passes, and it's not what you want to see. But, again, he's a younger cornerback. This is kind of a big season for him, though. If Verrett's healthy, then, yeah, I'd probably start him, but he's not healthy right now. He's got an ankle, and he's going to be out through the exhibition season. So, I mean, the perfect world is you make it a week one with Richard Sherman healthy, Witherspoon health, and you don't have to worry what's behind them.
He's Cam Inman, and he joins us on the Dialpad guest line. Cam, I haven't been at 95.7 very long, but I got to say I enjoy our chats, man. I appreciate you.
Likewise, and I will not guess Ray Ratto's feet size anytime ever in the future.
All right, good stuff. At Cam Inman on Twitter, Ray.
So now we know them all too well already.
We know Cam makes good life choices.
100%. All right.
Was that the litmus test?
Yeah.
All I know is I work in a job where I talk about dudes' feet for 4 hours.
And you should be so lucky.
Yeah.
Why are you offended by that?
No,
Those are the stories that are presented to you.
I'm just stating facts.
Would you rather talk about Antonio Brown's feet
or
some guy who beat his kid and didn't get suspended by the NFL?
You're right about that, but I think if I had a third option, I'd rather sell used Yugos. That's all. And I'm just thinking out loud. All right.
I don't think you make a great commission on that.
Well, it depends. They're kind of a novelty.
That's true.
I don't think there's that many of them.
Has the Yugo come back around?
Yeah,
is that what you're saying?
Price. You drive up the price. That's all we're saying.
Oh, we're killing the demographic with Yugo talk.
Yeah. The country doesn't even exist anymore.
It happens, man. All right? It happens. Dragnet, they had to drive a Yugo and all their cars kept getting stolen. Yeah, great movie, by the way, for all you youngsters out there. You want to see Tom Hanks in his prime? Albie's rapping. I'm talking about Tom Hanks
here. I'm absolutely sure they don't want to see Tom Hanks in his prime.
You should. It's a great movie. All right. The Virgin Connie Swale. Okay, Battle of the Bay is tonight. Could the Giants and the A's eventually play in the same division, guys? When we talk a little bit about the discrepancy between the AL wild card, the NL wild card. We do it in sports every year. Oh, look at this division, that division, the difference in records, playoff positioning, etc. So we'll talk about potential realignment. John Morosi joined the morning show, and he had some interesting comments about that. So we will do it straight ahead. In the meantime, this segment brought to you by Fremont Bank. Full service banking, no compromises.
Now back to the Damon Blue Show on 95.7 The Game.
Hello and good afternoon. Ryan Covey sitting in for Damon Bruce, Matt Kolsky, Ray Ratto. You know, I just walked by Gabe Shapiro, one of our salespeople in the hallway, and he said, you know, you're a lucky man, Ryan Covey. And I said, really? Why is that? He said, you have the opportunity every day to make people's lives just a little bit better. He said, and I want you to think about that the next time you go on the air.
Surprisingly deep from Gabe Shapiro.
Yeah, I said, Gabe, get me some endorsement money, dog. What are you doing talking to me? Nah, I said, thank you. I appreciate that. And so that's something to consider anyway.
But
so,
also endorsement money.
Yeah, but yeah, back to the first part of that. Go handle it. I'll sell anything. But very nice to have a moment with one of your colleagues in the hallway, Ray. You know, do people talk to you in the hallway, Ray?
No, they are knowledgeable and bright people who know that nothing is gained by engaging me in conversation.
I'm not being cheeky. I like that shirt. I do.
I swear to God, shut up.
I do. I enjoy it. It's a great color on you. That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying. Ray Ratto, Matt Kolsky.
How would you describe that? San Diego Clippers colors?
Shut up.
I don't think I can
stress this enough.
I think you're onto something there with the old Clippers. Right,
you know
there.
What? Screw you, 510. Kolsky's the Fredo.
Yeah, jump off a cliff.
Sorry.
Damn.
I'm going to ask you this every time you do that.
It's got to be the rudest thing you can say to a person.
Why do you read that?
Glutton for punishment.
I'm smart. I can handle things. I'm smart. I'm not dumb like everybody says. I'm smart and I want respect. That's all right. I can tell you, actually, Matt Kolsky's a lot of things. The Fredo of the 95.7 is definitely not one of them. Fredo implies a certain level of stupidity, naivety, if you will. Kolsky's a lot of things. Stupid or naive is not one of them.
Sometimes naive. I'll call myself
hard-headed,
out on that.
Hard-headed, sure.
Definitely hard-headed.
Stubborn, yes.
Incredibly.
I don't think naive's appropriate, though. I'm not signing off on that.
I'm certainly not Fredo. 510.
Yeah,
how
that's,
dare you.
That's hard, man. 650, though, feeling me, so it's all good, right?
Well, we're all feeling you.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, yeah. Appreciate it. All right. 888-957-9570. We got the battle of the Bay tonight, guys. Giants, A's. I don't know if you heard. These two teams play here in the Bay Area. And, you know, I heard the guys on Papa Steiny and Guru, Steiny, Guru, and Bonte. Sorry, my bad. BSG. Got it. My fault. Bonte, Steiny, and Guru. A lot of people coming and going. And they were talking about whether or not the A's and the Giants are a rivalry, right? And, you know, with these teams that only play once a year since interleague plays come along. And does it really truly constitute a sports rivalry? I just asked you guys, before we hear the sound from John Morosi, rivalry for you?
No. I'm Team Bonte on this.
Well, okay.
here's what I can say. I don't know what any individual person means when they say something is or is not a rivalry. I'll tell you this. If I was a fan of either team, there's at least three, if not six or seven, other teams I would consider bigger, more important rivals than the crosstown rival. And that's the same way I think about it as a White Sox fan. When the White Sox play the Cubs, I desperately want the White Sox to win. Otherwise, I don't care that much about the Cubs. And it doesn't hurt me any if they do well.
You know, they won the World Series a couple years ago.
I do, and it did not bother me. I think it's cute. What I'm saying is...
cute, he says.
I will take every opportunity to trash them when possible. But again, it's like a friendly, goofy thing. I don't really care if they win or lose because the only time I'm going to see them in games that really super matter is a World Series. And then everybody's winning. So if I'm a Giants fan, I'm a bigger rival with the Dodgers, the Diamondbacks, the Rockies, the Padres, and, you know, probably like the Mets, frankly. If I'm the A's, I'm much more concerned about the Astros, Rangers, Mariners, and Angels, and probably the Yankees and Red Sox and maybe the Twins, right? I mean, these are the teams I'm worried about. Is it a rivalry because you play across the bay from each other? We could sell some hats that way, probably, but it doesn't really matter.
The Dodgers and Angels are not a rivalry. As you said, Cubs-White Sox, not a rivalry. And I'm not convinced that Mets-Yankees is a rivalry.
Yeah.
What if these teams all played in the same division? If it was broken up not by conferences or, you know, National League, American League, but it was purely regional?
I think it'd be an absolute travesty.
Why?
Because right now, the way they do it, you get to see every team in baseball. It's one of the great benefits of living in a two-team area. If you start putting them together, then you get stuck with the goofy schedule where you only get to play one division in the other league or two divisions in the other league if they expanded. And I don't think that's good. I think the idea that you can go see any team whenever you want, see any young player that, you know, just suits your fancy, that's a great thing.
Yeah.
And nobody ever brings it up because they don't think of it. But it's a luxury that's there. And you'll miss it when the next Vlad Guerrero III decides to, you know, play on a team that doesn't come to your town. I don't need to see more Giants A's. That's not a it is not a rivalry. It's never been a rivalry.
Yeah,
and forcing it to be one because you think geography matters is a sign that you don't understand the market you're talking about.
I wanted to say quickly, what they do in the NHL to make the hockey playoffs, in theory, more interesting and have more rivalry set up, the way they've structured the playoffs now with the wild card, but you play teams in your own division, it basically sets up for the Sharks to play the Golden Knights in the playoffs every year. The thing that I used to love about the hockey playoffs, which I now don't get, was the idea, unless they're a wild card, of course, then you could play anybody, but the idea that it could be any 1 through 8, and the one plays 8, regardless of where they reside within the conference. And now that that's been taken away, I almost feel like the element of seeing something, a matchup that you might have never seen before, it goes away, and the likelihood of that happening is a lot less. And that bothers me, because that was one of the cool things about the playoffs. You never, in 1 year, it might be the Stars, and then you might play the Red Wings, when the Red Wings are still in the conference, of course. But that's gone now, because the NHL wants all these rivalry games. They want the Sharks and the Kings and the Ducks and the Golden Knights playing each other all the time. And as a hockey fan's perspective, I get to see that 10 times in the regular season. Why do I need to see it in the playoffs, too?
The NHL had long ago made the mistake that hockey is based on rivalries, because there were rivalries when there were only six teams, because teams played each other all the time. You know, and then they went to, well, Calgary should play Edmonton a lot because they don't like each other. Well, except that Calgary and Edmonton haven't been much fun to watch for most of the last 20 years. So what's that getting you?
Right.
I mean, the NBA has figured it out as well as anybody. Just say you play each team in the other conference twice, once home, once on the road. And then the other 52 games, you know, will figure it out within your conference. But you're going to get to see every player in the league play in a season if you want to.
What if?
And I think that's great. That's what it should be.
Why can't baseball do a similar thing to that?
Because they won't. Because what they're doing now is, if you're in Minnesota right now, you'll get to see a bunch of American League games, and then they give you a division to watch, but you don't get to see the other two divisions in the other league.
I know, but if we're saying they might realign, so play the Morosi cut, because I think it's interesting.
And by the way, my partner on the Butcher Shop, Butcher Boy, has been talking about this for a while, and he just texted me. He's like, now everybody wants realignment because Morosi said it? I've been saying it for years. The six months I've been with him, he's been saying it.
The answer to the question is yes. All right. Now, because John Morosi, legitimate baseball reporter, said it, we're all talking about it. That's correct.
All right. Here's John Morosi. I think you're legit, Butch. I love you, man.
Okay? He's very legit, just not a baseball reporter.
I want to go back to the playoffs!
Here's John Morosi.
I do think it's possible, not imminently, but by this time in the next decade, let's say 10 years from now, 8 years from now, we could see a scenario where if MLB gets to 32 teams, where the Giants and A's are in the same division, and you see a universal 32-team major league, quote unquote, with the DH standardized and radical realignment of the divisions, where this would be a recurring theme during the course of the season, where the Giants and A's play a lot.
So then you essentially set up a scenario where you play, say, half or two-thirds of the teams based on geographical divisions, for instance, within the one major league. You play the eastern half of the country, one home series, one away series, and then you figure the rest out within the people closer to you, right? Doesn't that give you more or less what you want?
Well, no, because they're trying to basically say, okay, we want these new geographical rivalries, which means we want these teams to play a lot against each other. Mostly what realignment is, it's about cutting down on travel costs.
Yeah.
And that's all it is. It's not about anything else. I mean, and there's nothing magical. I mean, let's say the Angels and Dodgers happen to suck in the same year. You want to watch that 20 times? I mean, how does that help you?
No, the
whole idea that geography makes rivalries has been debunked about 1,000 times.
But isn't part of the reason it's been debunked because the way our leagues are set up doesn't necessarily favor geographical rivalries? Like, isn't that sort of baked into the pie? Because, like we're saying, Giants, A's, Cubs, White Sox, even, well, I mean, the Nets were never good enough to be a rival, but other sports as well, to Niners, Raiders, right? They very rarely play each other in a meaningful game.
Playoffs make rivalries. Nothing else has ever done it. Nothing else ever will, because that's when your emotions get highest.
Right, but that you're basically not going to play each other in the playoffs if you're in opposite leagues or opposite conferences. So
Which is fine.
I know, but I'm just saying, if you made them all in one conference, I think you could cultivate local rivalries, and the local part of it would contribute to the rivalry, because that stuff matters to the fans. Not to the players, but to the fans.
I don't think there's any evidence that says it does matter to the fans, and you're the one who said it about Chicago. And I'm saying it about here. There's never been an A's-Giants rivalry, even in the year they played each other in the World Series. It's just a thing that we kill time with the two times a year when they play each other. There's no great... I mean, the Giants fans have worked very hard to ignore the A's for going on 60 years now. And that's always been true. It's always going to be true, unless all of a sudden the A's start marketing directly to the Giants saying, you guys suck.
But don't you think?
And they don't do that. So I don't believe that will ever happen. Not in my lifetime, not in yours. I think it's a waste of time. I also am not convinced they're going to expand by two teams in the next 10 years.
That caught me as well. Hold on. We'll finish this out. Let's get an idea that's bringing in the 4 o'clock hour.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.